This is episode 104 with my dad, Mr. Roxon.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxon.
Welcome, everybody, to As Told by Nomads. Now, today's guest is my dad, Mr. Roxon. And, you know, a few episodes ago, you got to hear my mom and my brothers. But today's episode is on my dad and why he decided to become a diplomat. And then we'll dive into some personal stories. But welcome to the show, Dad.
Yeah, thank you, Akintayo.
Yeah, you guys just heard him call me Akintayo. Akintayo is my full name, but Tayo is for short. So, I'll just come out and ask the obvious. Why did you want to become a diplomat?
I did not actually plan to be one. Mm-hmm. After my university education, I went for the Youth Corps, the National Youth Service Corps in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. After the completion of the Youth Corps service, we were interviewed by the Civil Service Commission. Then we had choices to pick. And Ministry of Foreign Affairs was one of my choices. So I was interviewed, and I passed the interview and got admitted to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Huh. So in short, I did not actually plan to become one until I passed the interview and I started the job. And since then, so far, so good.
Now, all right. So before we go into that, some listeners might be wondering what the Youth Corps is. How would you describe the Youth Corps to people not familiar with the term?
Yeah, the National Youth Service Corps is what is called a compulsory national youth service that any graduate of Nigeria must do for the national service before he or she can get employment to any service.
Okay. Yeah. So basically you have to work for 4 years. Not for 4 years. You have to go through 1 year to be considered
1 year compulsory national service.
Right. To be considered eligible to work in Nigeria.
So with that, in fact, it's one of the requirements by the government job before you can sub.
Okay. All right. So now let's go through the next step. So now you picked foreign service, as one of the options they gave that was given to you. What happened next? What was it like? What was, those first days, you're like, okay, I'm doing foreign service. What was next?
No, let me first tell you what it entails to be a foreign service officer.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you must have read at least any of the arts, social sciences, or humanities. Mm-hmm. In the university. Some of my colleagues did read the sciences, but the moment we were all employed and started the service, we began the rudiments of being a diplomat through the on-the-job training by our mentors, our bosses, and all that. They gave us so many things to do, and they taught us the trick or and the etiquette of the job.
Right.
After a certain period of time, we were asked to proceed to what is called the Foreign Service Academy. This Foreign Service Academy is also a year course, and it entails lecturers from various disciplines coming over to impart knowledge into us, lecturers from different universities, home and abroad. And that 1 year was a rigorous training for us, both in theory and in practical. By the time we finished the course, at the end of the year, we were made to travel to different parts of the country. That is what they call the state tour, because it is believed that if a diplomat is to be posted out of his country, he must have the knowledge of what that country is far and near. Mm. So we traveled all over the country. We met the governors. We met the traditional rulers. We went touring some important places of culture and customs and all that. And by the time we came back, we were fully enriched on what Nigeria is. And we were ready to go and propagate what Nigeria is to the outside world.
Ah. So you really had to understand the country as a whole, because you know you're from Southwest, and they wanted you to understand North, South, East, West. So if you go out of the country, you can basically communicate effectively.
Exactly. So exactly.
Huh. Okay. Now and then, so 1 year with that, 1 year with all these people, is a rigorous process, and then did you now officially become a Foreign Service official?
All along, I have been a Foreign Service officer because as a graduate, I entered the service as a Foreign Service officer. And when we finished that 1 year Foreign Service Academy, we were ready armed with all the niceties of the job. Okay. So we have been equipped with all the paraphernalia of the job. And when we finished the job, when we finished the course, we still stayed in another department for almost a year after I was posted to Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay. Now, I want to dive into here. Stockholm, Sweden, what was that like? Yeah, because I don't know if you had traveled, but you probably had traveled before. I don't know. I can't remember if you had traveled before then, but now you're going to Stockholm, Sweden. It's very cold, but it's different environment, new people. What was your first impression, and how did it all go about?
I was not caught unawares on what I would have met in Sweden, because before we left, I told you that we had mentors, we had bosses, mm-hmm. who had traveled far and wide before us, mm-hmm. who had been to all these countries that some of us were posted to, mm-hmm. and we got lectures and tutorials from them. Even in the 1 year Foreign Service Academy, different bosses were asked to come and give their experience to what they did in their different missions. So we were accustomed to some of the things we were going to meet. So when I got to Sweden, there was no surprise at all, other than the fact that I knew that it's a very cold region, mm-hmm. and I was prepared for it. That time, you were just a baby.
I was a baby, so, yeah.
So we got you bundled up and got all the winter kits for you, and I started the job.
Okay. All right. Now, you started the job. I'm curious, what did your mentors tell you to help prepare, and then how did you connect with the people once you got there? Because I don't even know what you do when you're, you know, when you go outside and you meet all these people. I don't know what your day is comprised of. So I'm just wondering how you connected with people and what your mentors told you specifically.
You know, like we've been given training at home. Mm-hmm. So what we are now exposed to is like outside training, foreign training, and which is on the job there. So we have to learn while we're at our various missions called embassies or high commissions or consulate general. Mm-hmm. basically, we were doing what we call political relations, bilateral relations, economic relations, and so many other things concerning information about the countries where we are posted to. We learn about what will be of benefit to Nigeria, and we report such back to Nigeria with comments and recommendations and all that. Hmm. Then, yes. And as a matter of fact, I didn't find it difficult to reach out to people because I am an extrovert. I'm outgoing. It doesn't take time for me to make friends and all that.
Yeah, it was the perfect position for you then.
Yeah, it doesn't take time. And when you make friends in diplomatic circle, you have to mind what you say. We have the language with which we communicate with each other. There are some ethics of business that you don't just go out freely and meet people and start talking everything. So one has to be very circumspect and cautious in whatever he or she says. So, but these Swedish people, I enjoyed them. We were able to communicate. I was a junior officer, very junior. I was the one following my ambassador to meetings then. So I covered so many meetings, not only in Sweden, but in Denmark, Norway, and Finland, because Sweden, our embassy in Sweden is concurrently accredited to Denmark, Norway, and Finland, all Nordic countries.
Scandinavia, yeah.
Or whichever one you want, you can call it Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. Scandinavian countries or Nordic countries. Mm-hmm. So we are operating from Stockholm, Sweden, to all these cold regions and every cold region. So I was I cut my teeth there with my first ambassador, the Ambassador May, who also taught me some of the tricks of the business, along with other officers who were senior to me then.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because I didn't. This is why I was glad I was doing this interview, because I'm going to learn a lot myself. You basically, you know, you look at the overall landscape of the country you're in, the economic, the political, you know, financial, and then you report back to the country as to potential opportunities where both countries could work. So, who are you reporting back to exactly? You're reporting to the government of Nigeria. And then they pass it down to the several ministries and, you know, go back and forth?
Apart from all those you have mentioned, we also take care of the interests of Nigerians who reside in such countries.
Okay.
Yes, I will now go back to your question. As a diplomat, you must be able to study the political, economic, cultural, all aspects of the country you are posted to, and look at the good ones and the bad ones, sift the good ones from the bad one, and write a very good report to your ministry. And in this case, it is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. When we say write back to the government, it is the ministry we are writing to. And when the ministry feels or the ministry deems it fit that this report is of good essence and the government can use it, then the ministry can dispose that, the ministry can decide to, how do I say, the ministry can decide to tell government that let us use this report as one of our policy initiatives.
No, I love it. Yeah, and then to go back to what you said earlier, you also represent the interests of Nigerians abroad. So whether it's visas, you know, immigration, I guess, you know, deportation, stuff like that, right?
Yes, we look out for the interests of Nigerians wherever they are in the country where we're posted to. This is what we call consular. For instance, if they have problems, maybe consular problems, maybe they have a student's crisis, maybe some of them are in the hospital, or maybe some of them have problem with the government there, we try to play a mediatory role. We try to intervene and appeal to the government of the country to temper justice with mercy, that even though if they commit offense which is punishable, they should be treated accordingly, just like they will have treated their own citizen. Okay. With, yes.
Okay. Okay. And another thing I remember growing up was when the president of Nigeria would come to the country you're staying at, you all welcomed them. So I was curious to know if that's also a responsibility of the embassy, of the foreign official, or of a diplomat to welcome the government official in the foreign country. Is that correct?
Because that is the foremost duty of any embassy in any country.
So that's the big responsibility. Okay, all right.
To receive the president, government officials, ministers, and all that, because that's why we're here. Because the ambassador is representative of the president in wherever country is posted to. If we don't receive our president, then we don't have any job doing wherever we are posted.
Okay, so you receive him, you tell him, like, so you just bring him from the airport, take him to the, I guess, hotels, and then you give them the agenda of the day, of the week.
Even before his arrival, we would have sent a lot of briefing, and from the airport to his hotel or wherever he stays, we will be giving him a lot of briefings on whatever he has come to do. Mm-hmm. So that, because he will ask us questions as well, anyway. So,
okay.
It is our duty, is our president, and we are representing him here.
Okay. Now, this is very, very interesting. So, obviously, we went to Sweden. So, since I've been alive, obviously, it's been Sweden, Burkina Faso, Vietnam, U.S. and U.S. What has been your favorite so far? I know you don't. I know what you're gonna say. You're gonna say you like everyone, but what was your favorite, Dad?
I'm happy that you have preempted me.
Yeah, because I already know how you answer these questions, Dad. You always do this.
But as I already told you.
Oh man,
I never have a favorite because each country I have been posted to, or each mission I have gone, each has its own peculiar allure, which if I break it down now, it take a lot of time on this type of interview.
Gotcha.
But each country, to me, has been very interesting to me in accordance with the culture and the mores of the society there. And, you know, I told you that I'm very outgoing and I mix very freely. So wherever I am, I try to make sure that I enjoy where I am. So okay. Before I leave home at all, I always make up my mind that here I am going, I must make the best use of it. So I cannot tell you particularly or specifically that this is the best country I've served, because I've enjoyed each according to what I met then.
Okay.
And presently I'm in the US, and even before I was posted to the US, I've been coming to the US since way back.
Okay.
So so that's as far as I can answer such question.
Okay. Well, okay, I'll do this then. You meet a lot of important officials. Who was the highlight of your out of all the people you've met? Who was the most impressive person you met? Who was your favorite person that you met?
I think this same question has the same as semblance with the previous one.
No one stood out? No one stood out?
I've met so many important people that I cannot readily tell you that, hey, this one is the... I've met with presidents, I've stayed with the president inside the same hotel, I've stayed 4 nights each time for 2 years in with the president too, which I don't want to mention.
Oh, you can't mention. Okay, that makes sense. You can't mention some of these. Okay.
Which, and I saw when I compare their lifestyle, definitely so different, and I take them for what they are, and that's the way I feel I am too, because nobody, no two people can be the same. But I've met a lot of interesting people that have assisted me in my career, and also assisted me in what I am today in terms of knowledge, in terms of education, and in terms of awareness. I cannot quantify what I have learned from all these important people that I have met and that I'm still meeting to date.
So relationships have been key and in your advancement, and obviously you can't mention these people here, but in your diplomatic career, relationships have been key and you've kept in contact.
Yeah, exactly so.
All right. So let's talk about, you know, me, Dele, Tunde, you know, all of us, mom. When we were moving, I never asked you this growing up, but what did you notice from how we took in each move? I know particularly Burkina Faso was a little, we were excited at first, but I know for me initially it got difficult, then it got good. So I don't know what your observation was. When we were growing up, and you know, we always had to move.
Yes, let me start from Sweden.
Okay.
Because then you are a baby, as I earlier said. But I found out that you are very active, and also willing to learn as soon as we got to Sweden, because we passed through London, we spent some time in London before we eventually got to Sweden. I was with my brother then, just 1 or 2 weeks before we eventually moved to Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very attentive and always willing to learn the ABC and everything, spellings and all that. If I can remember vividly, your mom used to teach you the man, girl, and all that.
Yeah.
And anytime you saw a man going, come out to the patio saying, "Hey, man, you see a girl. Yes. And your brother too, when your brother came, I knew your disposition changed.
Yeah.
But later, because as a baby, later you accepted him because you thought first that this a strange person coming in, but later you even thought it was a toy. But after a while you became friends, and you were always taking photographs together. Yes. Then when we came back to Nigeria, and I was posted again to Burkina Faso, the experience was different, because we are going to a tropical region, just like from Nigeria to another country, with the same weather. And you and your brother, you are already going to a primary school in Lagos, and with intensive coaching, you are ready for wherever school you are going, and you have already even sat for secondary school, government college, King's College, and all this, what we call common entrance.
Yeah.
And another one for university, secondary school, University of Lagos International Secondary School. You got admission there, and later I think you got admission at the government college, Ijani King.
Mm-hmm.
But all those one could not happen because since I was posted, you had to follow me. And what I normally do is that I always go before you, before my family, to make arrangement for your school before your arrival, which I did in Burkina Faso. I got to Ouagadougou early enough, made inquiries about the International School of Ouagadougou, which is American oriented. And by the time you came, it was like a smooth sail. Both of you, you and your brother, got interviewed and got placement to different classes. And as usual, I think you are going too, so because I know before long, you and your brother became very popular in the school. And
so you did.
Yes, so not only for being okay, but for academics as well, because you and one lady were always coming first or second, I can remember. So, one Canadian lady like that, a girl now.
Yeah, her name was Wendy Rutten. So that means you didn't. Yeah, that means we did a good job of hiding the difficult parts of you, because you only saw that. Because I remember Dele and I, Dele got very very into soccer. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I know you. It took some time. It doesn't really take a long time before you got assimilated into the school system, because you and your brother, after a while, you began to go after the school hours. You know, it's not the school is or it's not far from where we were living.
Yeah,
and we were going for sports. There was a time you wanted tennis, later basketball, another. You even lost one tooth at the time. I can't remember.
I lost a tooth for playing basketball. I lost my tooth playing basketball. I chipped it. So, I didn't lose it. I chipped it. Yeah.
So you got graduated into the system.
Yeah, I remember that was like seventh grade. Sixth grade was a little rough. Mummy knew it more because you often at work. But once I got into the system, I said it in previous episodes, sports was like my biggest connector. That was where I started to make friends. Then we started to connect, you know, Michael Albright, you know, you remember Michael, people like that. So, but once I started doing that, Dele on his episode, he said the same thing. For him, was when he started, you know, he knew that he needed to figure out a way to play. Because, you know.
No, but, you know, I remember now that you said that at the beginning, you were saying that you were feeling one kind, but I.
Yeah, I was feeling weird.
I said, I don't believe in anything. I always believe I can do this. I don't like fighting something from angle of defeatism.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I claim equality, so anything happens, so we are equal.
Yeah.
So I think I can remember a little bit, but it didn't take time before you got over the search.
I remember. That was always your thing. That was always your thing.
The school.
Yeah, that was always your thing. You always used to tell us that, you know, everyone's equal. Because sometimes we'll come back and we'll feel maybe a bit inferior. You'd be like, no, I don't believe in that. We're all equal. And this is how, you know, and that's, I remember you telling us that specifically.
And that's the same spirit and the policy and philosophy I still have.
Yeah, you definitely still have that. Definitely got that from you. But so let's do this Nigerian thing. You made sure, you know, every one of us sounds different. You know, Dele and I sounds different. You know, we don't have Nigerian accents. We sometimes it slips. But one thing that you made very, you made sure we did was that we kept our Nigerian culture. Why did you want us to really be familiar with our home country? You didn't want us to lose that. And you always said that. Every time we traveled to, even when we came here for school, you're like, yep, always remember where you're from. Always remember where you're from. Come back during vacations. We want you to meet these people. It's very important. Why was that important that you raised us that way?
North, south, east, and west. There's nowhere like home. Mm-hmm. Even here in America, you see a lot of Chinese, you see a lot of Indians, and all of them. There's no way during their own end of year period, they always love to go back home, because anybody who is not proud of where he comes from is not fit to live. Anybody who's not proud of his culture is not fit to live. No matter how you sojourn in any country, always remember where you are from. Because even if you don't remember, the country where you are, they will tell you that you are from this place. Even if you are American today, and somebody says that you are American, they will ask you, where are you originally from? They will ask you a short question. But it is the pride of a person to appreciate his culture, to appreciate where he comes from. And that is why we'd like you to go home regularly and mix, because there are a lot of opportunities back home too. It's not only outside. But the ability to be able to shuttle between where you are and go back home is what matters most, because there are advantages you can derive from going home and coming back to where you are. So when some place where you are, where it's too hot, you can go there, go back to where you come from originally and relax a little bit, and I come back. And that's the essence of being what you are, the culture you are from. The Jews, when they go back to Israel, they are happy. The Indians, when they go back to their country in India, they are happy. The Chinese too, they do the same. Mm-hmm. When they come back to the U.S., they face their work. Mm-hmm. So you must be proud of your country and be a part of the development of that country, no matter how poor that country is. And what we need you as experts. When the time comes, you go and impart your knowledge of that you have acquired over time abroad to the development of Nigeria. And that's one of the reasons why we always talk and discuss with Nigerians in diaspora, that we need their expertise back at home. We need their services so that they can help Nigeria to grow better and improve the employment of our teeming youth who are passing out of the universities without job.
That's a good point that you bring, because that's leading me to my next question. It's your belief that in order for emerging countries, countries like Nigeria, who just recently became number one GDP in Africa, India, all these countries, Thailand, the people that will help the country achieve the potential that it can actually achieve is through the citizens in diaspora and people that come back, so you don't have brain drain. So you feel like the people in diaspora are the ones that would help build the country to the way it's supposed to be. Is that your opinion?
Yes, we've always been preaching that we must return the Nigerians who have already acquired a lot here, mm-hmm, back to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. But we still have to ensure that we have all what it takes to absorb them in Nigeria, because we cannot ask them to come to Nigeria and relinquish whatever they have here, because over time they have been in the US, they have been in the West, they have been in Europe, and they have established relationship, they have married there, they have family and all that, they have social security and everything. So we can ask them to abandon such, because we cannot provide them with that. But what I and most of my colleagues used to tell them is that whatever they can to assist the country of their birth, they should always endeavor to render such at little or no push, Mm-hmm. So that's some of them, and I can tell you, for sure that many of them, they are responding favorably. They are responding favorably. Their response is very impressive. Some are going home to help assist some medical staff with medical equipment, some hospitals with assistance in terms of providing them with their knowledge, maybe for 3 months, and come back to US. And I can continue to mention a lot.
Yeah, no, it's good. No, I the reason I was bringing this is because obviously, as a diplomat, I can imagine you get to see a lot of Nigerians abroad, and you also get some of these statistics. You know, where you see, you know Nigeria is on the rise, potential is right there, and you know you can see the path to success. And sometimes it may be frustrating seeing, you know, people not taking advantage of that. So I just wanted to hear your opinion on that. A couple of questions here before we close. For direct investments, I read something today where a lot of Nigeria attracts probably one of the most, you know, direct foreign investments from, you know, foreigners, and a lot of headquarters of Africa are based in, you know, in Lagos, Abuja, or wherever. But it's in Nigeria. How would you advise, like, all these foreigners coming here? Because you being that diplomat you are, what would you tell them to be very careful of? Because the way we do business is very different from the way, you know, Westerners do business. And, you know, there's some nuances that people will pick up, that need to pick up.
My advice to any foreign investor going to Nigeria or going to Africa is to make Nigeria their preference, because Nigeria now, as an emerging economy, is the preferred destination of any foreign investor in terms of very high return on investment and the good economic climate Nigeria now has. Nigeria has deregulated its economy. Nigeria has also removed some of the impediments of registration of companies in such a way that we now have what we call one-stop shop, where all the registration, license, tax, and everything can be paid at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yes. Those who are already there, they know that the return on investment is so high that they keep on inviting other foreigners to come. For those people, they are reaping the reward immediately, and their profits can be transferred back to their country here in the US. So, and I also want to advise some foreign investors here to take advantage of the good political relations between Nigeria and US, and go and invest in Nigeria. And by the time they finish everything, they will be the better for it.
No, it's true. I mean, because, you know, you hear it's very much high reward, higher risk. You know, as being an entrepreneur, there's always risk involved. So that's something that you know going into something. But you always tell me this: the returns that happen when you succeed in Nigeria greatly surpass the returns that you have, just basically because of a lot of the regulations you said, the one stop, the tax laws, the registration of the company, and the amount of things you have to pay. It's not as structured. I mean, it's not as you know, I guess, red taped and all this as, you know, maybe other countries would have. So you get to, the ceiling is really, really high. Sometimes you can't even see it. And it's bursting with a lot of people that want to be employed, right? You know, it's the largest country in Africa population-wise. So there's so many people, human capital, that need to, you know, go work. So the room for growth is just exponential.
Nigeria, I can tell you, we used to have some obsolete laws, but all those rules and regulations have been replaced with simple registration exercise that can last, let's say, at most 2 days, but I can say 24 hours, because But there is what we call the NIPC, Nigeria Investment Promotion Commission, is seized with this duty. A foreigner can go there today, early in the morning, and finish registration before after the day runs out.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm glad you're saying that, because I'm glad you're dispelling some stereotypes, because obviously Nigeria's had a lot, has been synonymous with corruption, and that's not, I'm not saying, you and I yes, would admit that yes, there's been corruption.
There's no country that doesn't have corruption. There's no country that is not corrupt. The level is only the level that differs. But I'm telling you, Nigeria is trying as much as possible with this new government and with its transparency policy to ensure that we reduce corruption to the barest minimum.
Good. All right. We're basically at a close here. So what advice would you give other people aspiring to be diplomats, Dad?
Well, they should be very... what can I tell them?
anything. I'm sure anything you say will be beneficial for sure.
You must have the knowledge of international relations. Mm-hmm. You must have the knowledge of your country that you are from. You must also have the knowledge of the countries surrounding your country, like the regional countries. And you must also be widely read, very conversant with the current affairs, most especially what we now have as social media. You must be able to be on your toes to know what is happening today and what is going to happen tomorrow. And as a diplomat, you should be able to analyze any reports and don't just take that report hook, line, and sinker. Read it, look at it, analyze it, and bring out the best in it.
Yeah.
As a diplomat, you should also mind what you say. You don't say everything. You learn, you watch, and you study the person you are talking to before you respond. You don't just divulge all the pieces of information you have in you. Try as much as possible to extract a lot of information from whoever you are talking to, so that you can make good use of it. So as a diplomat, just try to be humble, courteous, and at the same time, very respectful to whoever you are dealing with.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's listen, observe, you know, be widely read, you know, and also tap into your curiosity. Because, yes, you have to have knowledge of your country, but you also have to be curious enough to want to know more about the world at large.
It's the hallmark of a diplomat to be curious. Mm-hmm. Yes, because out of your curiosity, you learn a lot and you'll be able to do a lot of reporting. And at the same time, it will be good for you as a diplomat too.
Ah, well, Mr. Roxon, I want to thank you for coming on, Dad. This has been great. I've definitely learned. This has been as educational as I'm sure it would be for everybody else there. But thank you for coming on, Dad.
You're welcome. Unfortunately, my voice has not been able to heal as I expected because of the...
yeah, I know, yeah. Hey, but you did a good job, though. You did a good job.
but I hope I try as much as possible to put my points across.
No, I heard
even,
everything.
Even my voice was coarse and hoarse.
No, you did a good job, Dad. It was very, very educational for me. So thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.